You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, delicious friends, and welcome to Who Did What Now, the history podcast that's not your history class, with me, your host, Katie Charlwood, history harlot and reader of books. If you are new here, this is not my usual voice. This is much sexier than my usual voice. I am sick, because of course I am, because I can't stay healthy for more than 5 minutes. But fuck it, it's fine. Here we are. Oh, you may have noticed that I speak with language more colourful than a kaleidoscope filled with the word fuck. But here we are. Welcome. If you don't like it, though, you might want to exit stage left. Good. Now that we've separated the wheat from the chaff, how are you? I hope you're doing well. Yeah, it's been a fun week. It's been a busy week trying to get sort of more of the tour dates locked in. The Glasgow show, like over half the tickets are gone now. So if you want to come see me in Glasgow, You're gonna want to get those tickets sooner rather than later. It's gonna be a good one, actually. I'm very excited for the Glasgow show. I have the perfect person to talk about, and my outfit is amazing. Although, if you want to contribute to my performance outfits, you can always donate to my Smutty Little Dress Fund, which is my PayPal, which I've renamed the Smutty Little Dress Fund for my own amusement. Oh man, but yeah, it's gonna be a good night. I'm very excited for the Glasgow show. All the events are going to be going up on the website, so they're going to be on there. And yeah, it's gonna be good. I'm excited. Are you excited? I'm excited. We should all be excited. But oh, it has been a busy week because I'm trying to like contact venues and arrange gigs and stuff. But I don't understand an event space that takes. Or somewhere that hosts any kind of event, that it takes 2 weeks to respond to an email. Like, that's madness to me. Because as far as I'm concerned, like, you should be, like, 2-3 days tops. As, you know, unless, you know, you're ill or you're on leave. In which case, you know, there should be someone else to do that for you. But yeah, I had a company contact me after 2 weeks for, you know, Glasgow. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. That's very kind and considerate of you. But, unfortunately, am I of all my Glasgow dates arranged for 2024? Sorry. Because, like, I did it, you know? Someone else got there first, which is a wee shame, obviously. But, like, maybe you should have answered your emails a bit quicker, and you know, but anyway, I know what you're thinking, quit your jibber jabber, in fact, you, I will, but first, we've got to get our source on. Our sources are Marlena Dietrich, Life and Legend by Stephen Buck, Marlena Dietrich by Maria Riva, Blue Angel, The Life of Marlena Dietrich by Donald Spodo, Stenberg and Dietrich, The Phenomenology of Spectacle by James Phillips. A Woman at War, Marlena Dietrich Remembered by David J. Riva. The Sewing Circle, Hollywood's Greatest Secret, Female Stars Who Loved Other Women by Axel Madsen. The Girls, When Sappho Goes to Hollywood by Diana McClellan. And of course we have our old favourites, History.com and Biography.com. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then let's begin. So, Marlena Dietrich was born, as most of us are. She was born... yeah. So, she was born Marie Magdalene Dietrich on the 27th of December 1901 in the Louis Strauss in Berlin. I will do accents. They will not be pleasant. You're just going to have to accept it. So, she was born to Wilhelmina Elizabeth Josephine. And a name I'm going to fuck up, but luckily I don't have to say it more than once. Louis Erich Otto Dietrich. It's a very sharp, short. Oh my God. I'm getting worse. It's a sharp, short name. It's like Louis Erich Otto Dietrich. See, it's... It's very difficult for my wee tongue to do. Is it, you know, it likes the long names, the elaborate names, but this is where we're at. So, Louis, he was a police lieutenant, and Wilhelmina was rich. She was from a rich family, a well-to-do family. They made their money on jewellery and clocks. And Marlena here, she is one of two children. She has an older sister who's like a year older than her. So it's 1900, her sister Elizabeth is born. And then she's born the year after. So there's like a year and a half between them. But there's the two girls and that's it. That's enough. So starting things off, she comes from a pretty privileged background. Her family's prosperous, things are going well. She's doing all right for herself. Unfortunately, like most of our stories, tragedy strikes. Because of course they fucking do, right? Of course it does. Of course. So her beloved father, Louis, one of those, he is thrown from a horse and dies of his injuries. And she's only 6 years old when this happens, leaving her mother a widow who is just not doing great. Unsurprisingly, being the turn of the 20th century, her mother goes into full-on mourning. So she is in her mourning garb, she doesn't go places, she dresses all in black. Like, it's very much the done thing of especially the well-to-do. But she is absolutely done. Like, she is full on grieving and, you know, her husband has died and she's allowed to do that. You're expected to do that. Especially, you know, in this era. And what happens is things are going okay until the outbreak of World War One, the Great War, the First War, however you want to phrase it. The war breaks out and the family business is not doing great because, you know, war. Although war is good for business, it's not necessarily good for that business. Not really a lot of clocks needed at this time. And so, desperation, their mother gets a job as a housekeeper. But she manages to work for one of Louis's old friends, Edward von Losch. So, Edward was a colonel in the Grenadiers, and he was, you know, relatively well-to-do as well. So things were okay. She kind of landed on her feet there. But when they get married in 1914, sort of the war has broken out, and then a little while later they get married. Wilhelmina, the mum, is wearing her mourning clothes for her first husband. Like, that is her wedding dress, is her mourning garb. Like, I'm not saying that that was a bad sign. I'm just saying, does that flag look vaguely maroon to you? Just a question. Just a thought, perhaps. So, they get married in 1914, and he's in the army. He's not around too much. And then 2 years later, 1916, he dies. He dies in combat, as one does when one is in the army, during a full-on world war. There is a wee bit of a silver lining, though. Because they were married, they had his pension. So they had von Losch's pension to kind of tide them over and keep them going. I should probably mention where the name Marlena came from. So basically, the second half of her second name and the first part of her first name smooshed together. So when she was younger, people would call her Lena, sort of for reasons, I guess. And so she decided to mix those together and make Marlena. So Marie Magdalene, Marlena. There you go. She's got a name. Good for her. She chose her name, and we have to respect that. So as she's grown up as well, is she's playing the violin, and she dreams of being a concert violinist. But then she starts getting these pains in her hand, and she goes to the doctors, and turns out she has this bone injury that didn't heal. So she's got this injured wrist, and she just can't play to the level of, like, a concert pianist anymore. And here's the thing, like, she was doing, like, theatre and poetry and all this other stuff as a backup. Like, it was a backup plan for her. Like, imagine your massive, amazing, wonderful career being a backup because you stumbled upon it. Like, you fell into it, like, by happenstance. You know, when I fall into things, I end up covered in mud. You know, I end up drenched and ruined and broken. She ends up with a career. Like, oh no, I just fell into it. Oh no. Like, I end up in the bin next to Oscar the Grouch, and she ends up at the Oscars. You know what I mean? Like, that's fun for everybody involved. But yeah, she was doing this as a backup. But I'm getting ahead of myself a wee bit. So when she's like 17, 18, she gets a job as like a violinist in an orchestra pit in a theatre in Berlin. So like back in the day, what would happen is silent films would play and the orchestra would play along. You know, they would do the dangerous music when the train would be getting towards the train tracks and the damsel would be tied to it by the devious villain. You know, they would play the appropriate, like, soundtrack for the movie. And that's what she did. She lasted 4 weeks before she was fired. But of course, a girl needs a job. And so she gets one as a chorus girl. And so she's on tour with the Guido Teicher's Girl Cabaret. Fuck me, my throat is so sore. I can't pronounce words properly. Like, I'm usually pretty good at, you know, European words, places. Nope, not today. Everything, I'm buggering it all up. But it's fine. I'm sure you'll forgive me. And so, yeah, she's on tour during these, like, vaudeville shows. And she tries to get into a drama academy. She auditions when she's 21 and she's desperately trying to get into this drama academy. What is it? The Max Reinhardt's Drama Academy. And they were like, no, she didn't get in. Not even a wee bit. And so she ends up doing chorus girl stuff, small theatre parts, you know, bits and pieces. And she's doing this around Berlin. But what she also does in Berlin is she starts going to the underground Berlin gay bars and drag balls. So she was very much part of this scene. And throughout her early 20s, she is going out partying. She's shagging men. She's shagging women. She's probably shagging people who are gender nonconformist. She's doing everything. Everyone, some might say. And she's having the best time. And we love this journey for her. When she's 22, she gets a teeny weeny role in a film called The Little Napoleon. So that's her debut to the moving pictures. That is not her accent. That was bad. That was really bad. So she's on the set of Tragedy of Love. Very optimistic one there, where she meets Rudolf Seiber. Now, as someone who's just constantly this big party girl and she's out shagging this person, that person, whoever, right? And she suddenly flips on this. She tells everyone that she's fallen madly in love, but all the evidence suggests that this, in fact, was a shotgun wedding. So, effectively, Marlene Dietrich was pregnant and being, you know, the good man that he was, I suppose, Rudolf Seiber decides he's going to make an honest woman out of her, and they get married, and it's in like a civil service, and they get married in May, and then Marlena's only child, their daughter, is born in December. Maria Elizabeth Seiber. Just, you know, May to December. That's 8 months. I'm just saying that's not a long time. I'm just putting it out there. It's a good day for a shotgun wedding. Yeah, I know, I squeezed it in there. I did it. I don't care. I did it. So they have this cookie cutter like family, husband, wife, baby, and they're married, yeah, and they stay married, like they don't get divorced because, I don't know, maybe they couldn't be arsed, maybe they stayed friends because, you know, they both got around and they seem to be pretty chill. Like he's living with like another woman for like 20 years and Marlena is just kind of doing whoever she wants. And they live separate lives, but they just can't be arsed getting divorced. I couldn't read anything about them not getting on, so maybe they were fine, you know. But yes, nuclear family, you might think, you know, she might settle down. Absolutely not. So she continues working on stage and on screen all through sort of the 1920s. But then in 1929, she meets Joseph von Sternberg. And what's interesting about these two is, as far as I remember, they currently hold like the most collaborations between an actor and a director. So these two like have worked together more than any other. They've been in more productions than any other actor slash director. So go them. That's actually fucking cool. So she gets her break as Lola on his film The Blue Angel, and this is her big break. And he's out there telling everybody that he discovered her. Like, and for years afterwards, Marlena would say that, you know, this was her first film, and, you know, and pretend like the old ones in Germany didn't exist, didn't happen. But no, this was just her being discovered. So she ends up being signed to Paramount Pictures just because this film does so fucking well. And she gets signed because they're trying to find, like, another Greta Garbo, who's Swedish. And so they wanted somebody else, and she's German, so, you know, she's foreign. She's out there, and she's doing well. And that's what they want. They want someone who has the same kind of appeal, that same, I don't want to say exoticness, but like, imagine like, oh, they're so exotic. they're German. Like, but Metro Golden Mayer, they had Garbo, and Paramount wanted their own Garbo. But they couldn't have another Swede, because that would be a turn up for the books. I regret nothing. And so they wanted their own, and so enter Marlena. So she leaves Berlin for Hollywood. She, you know, kisses her husband and her daughter goodbye, and she's like, I'll be back soon. But she's not. And it doesn't really matter, because at that point his mistress, who's like a dancer, I think, she's, you know, in there, you know, involved in that situation. Well, Marlena's headed over to Hollywood, and she's there, and she arrives, and Joseph von Sternberg, he just starts showering her with gifts, one of which is a green Rolls Royce. Now, I don't care much for green cars, nor for Rolls Royces, but I would not say no to one, even though I do not drive. That is not the point. If I had one of those, if I could afford a Rolls Royce, I feel like I could afford a driver, you know? Except I would call him a chauffeur, because I'm bougie like that. So Marlena is just cruising towards the US, preparing for her next film role, maybe flirting with some people on the boat. And, you know, because she has to travel by boat, because that's how one got around in the past. And she gets to the States, and the moment she steps off the boat, she is served with papers, because Joseph von Sternberg's wife, she was suing Marlena Dietrich for $600,000 for libel and for stealing her husband's affection. So basically this suit was accusing her of saying in an interview with some magazine in Germany that von Sternberg was in love with her and that he was going to leave his wife for her. And the studio is like, oh no, we can't have this. This is not something we can do right now. And Marlena's just like wanting to fight it, because she's like, fuck this for a game of soldiers. And what happens is the studio basically pay her off, and they make it settle and to not go public. Like, they're just like, no. Keep it stum. We're not having this. We have a reputation to think about. And like, the Hays Code was starting to come into effect at this point too. So if you don't know what the Hays Code is, it was this level of censorship that was adopted by sort of the motion picture scene, by all of the major studios, and they all just kind of agreed to it. And it's so fucking ridiculous. It had a list of actors and actresses who were blacklisted effectively for being like openly, you know, sexy, gay, who were using a lot of curse words in real life, who had behaviour that was seen as immoral or unethical, or, you know, not upstanding traditional values. Like, he just said this, it's so stupid. So it had a list of all these actors and actresses on it, and then it also had sort of rules that you had to follow, like you couldn't have relationships, quote-unquote relations, outside of marriage. You couldn't have like a couple sharing a bed together. You couldn't have anything that suggested sex. You couldn't have like a bunch of weird shit. Like, my personal favourite was, if a couple are in a bedroom, they have to have one foot on the floor all times. Like you couldn't have really sexy stuff going on, which in a way was really good, because it meant that at the time women would get decent roles, because they couldn't just be like a sex symbol. Like, you couldn't just be that. Like, you couldn't be pigeonholed into this specific sort of bit. And at the time as well, you had a lot of women working behind the scenes in Hollywood. Like, a lot of the major players initially were women, and then men realised you could make money off it, and then they came. But yeah, it was a very interesting time. So yeah, the Hays Code comes in. So women get pretty decent parts, because they can't just be a sex symbol, you know, a bit of fluff. And so they get decent roles. And then comes Marlena, who causes scandal on the set of Morocco because she's playing a cabaret star, as always. I say as always, but she is. She's playing a cabaret star and she's wearing a suit and she kisses another woman. Now, again, this is something that shouldn't be allowed according to the Hays Code, but she argues and says that it's essential to the plot and that it's necessary, and she kind of bullies slash convinces the censors to allow it and keep it in, and they do. And this is where she also starts having an affair with Gary Cooper, who's also having an affair with, like, another actress who wants to, quote, tear Marlena's eyeballs out. Like, okay, cool, that's fun. So naturally, this is a perfect time to go visit your husband. And she heads back to Germany, back to Berlin. And she gets there and turns out her daughter doesn't fucking recognize her. And she's like, oh no, this ain't good. And she decides, you know what? Y'all are coming back to America with me. Come on, let's go. And off they pop. They head over to the States. Now, as her daughter grows up, instead of, you know, sending her to school, like, you know, one should, she ends up having her become like a mini assistant and just drags her from set to set. So the more she's acting, the more she's getting around, she's bringing her with her. Now, part of this is probably like a wee bit selfish because she's upset that her daughter didn't recognize her. But another part was she gets this letter threatening to kidnap Maria and they're going to come get her and whatever. And so she always keeps her close. Like, she tells, you know, Stiber, the husband, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to call the cops. And so he's like, people have threatened to kidnap her. Eventually no one does. But, you know, yeah. Now, Maria, she basically ends up writing this book, which is kind of the equivalent of Mummy Dearest. And it is not favourable. It basically says that Marlena Dietrich was, you know, a bit of a bitch, which we kind of expected to the best of her abilities. But it also said that she was a wee bit racist. She was also a little bit sexist, which, you know, weird for a queer woman to hate other women, but she did. She really hated Josephine Baker, and I don't know if that's just because Josephine Baker was amazing and she was jealous, or because Josephine Baker was not white. So we have to take into consideration that not the best of people in the world is Marlena Dietrich. That being said, when von Sternberg goes back to Germany, she's like, maybe you shouldn't do that because things don't seem great over there. Because von Sternberg is Jewish and he's her friend and, well, collaborator, possibly lovers, whom's to say. And she's like, let's not do that. So she is doing okay film-wise in the 1930s. She's in well-received movies, but she's gone away from Paramount and she's making movies in sort of other countries, and she's making them in London, and they're expensive, and she's doing well, like, all right. But she ends up like number 126 in the box office rankings, and so she gets labeled poison, box office poison, which apparently is a big deal. And just like everybody else, it's just kind of, she fell out of fashion a wee bit. It's not really that big a deal. You know, she just wasn't at a thing. Like, Fred Astaire at one point was labelled box office poison. Fred fucking Astaire. You know, Katharine Hepburn, Greta Garbo. Like, all of the interesting ones. They're like, ooh. And so she gets labelled as that. And that's fine. But speaking of Katharine Hepburn and Greta Garbo and such, and I've got to say allegedly, because there's a wee amount of evidence, but not a huge amount of evidence, but there's enough of it. So here's the thing. The sewing circle was like this. It isn't like a club, you know, it's not like a members only jacket. No, although we should have sewing circle jackets if you want. Like, let's do that. Sewing circle. A little sewing circle. OMG. That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Anyway, yes. So basically, the sewing circle was more of a concept. And I'm not saying it's like a ring. You know, it's not like a drug ring. But it's a lesbian ring. Yeah, effectively. So lesbians in Hollywood, whether they were actors, actresses, I say actors, whether they were actresses or behind the scenes or writers or, you know, the wife of Jack Warner of Warner Brothers. Just saying. So they were lesbians in Hollywood, effectively. And that was the sewing circle. So I think Tallulah Bankhead, Claudine Colbert, so on and so forth. Marlena Dietrich. And Marlena's having affairs, men, women, whomever, having the best life. Because of this sort of known secret of who she was and who she was doing, that's kind of where Hollywood sort of loses its fizz with her. And she gets an interesting offer.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory, and was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mystery of Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
So it's the mid-30s. Her films are doing okay, but they're not great. And she starts dating John Gilbert. John Gilbert had gone from like silent movies to talkies, and he had a very light speaking voice, but the studios tried to like alter his voice and like post to kind of go make it sound a bit more manly. And as such, like, this rumor mill started going out that he had a high-pitched squeaky voice in it. Kind of tanked his career. Didn't tank his love life though, because he was married 4 times, and like in the middle of, like, I think between marriage 2 and 3, he's dating Greta Garbo, who ends up leaving him at the altar. Like, drama. Drama central, right? So, allegedly, his last marriage ended because of his affair with Marlena. But they, like, officially start dating between, like, 1935 and 1936, and she tries to get him a comeback in one of his films, because, you know, things are not going great for him. But it doesn't work, and he basically drinks himself to death. Like, that's what happens, you know. And Marlena is very upset over this. Like, she actually breaks down crying in a church, like, sobbing. I mean, I'm hoping it's real and it wasn't just for show. Like, it'd be nice to know that she had that level of empathy. But you know what they say, nothing gets you over the last one like the next one. And she starts getting down with Douglas Fairbanks Jr., who was very much married to Joan Crawford. Now, there are whispers, there are rumors that it probably happened. So basically there's a rumor that Joan Crawford was also part of the sewing circle. She was also part of the sewing circle. So that's right. And they end up like going on holiday together. Like Marlena Dietrich, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., like her husband, Rudolph, and Rudolph's mistress. Like just everybody all at once. But yeah, there's a thing as well in Hollywood at the time, and across America actually, is there was a thing called a lavender marriage. And a lavender marriage was usually put together by studios, you know, where if one person was like a lesbian or a gay man, and they would marry them to make them look like a heteronormative couple. Even if, say, for example, both of them were bisexual, right? It would be like that. Because have you ever noticed that if bisexual people, like if a woman is bisexual, you know, men often think that women are like pretending to like other women, you know, for performative reasons for men, or that they can be easily quote unquote turned, you know, and that gay men are going to be obsessed with them. Like, it's funny how the very concept of sexuality revolves around men. But I digress. So these lavender marriages would happen. I'm not saying this was one. I'm just saying that, you know, they assume that both of these people are going to be promiscuous and they're both going to, you know, fuck men. But the point is that they wanted it to look like this was a marriage, a real marriage, genuine marriage, but it's Hollywood, so how much is real? So yeah, there's rumours that she was having a wee thing with Joan Crawford. There's also rumours she was having a thing with Mae West. You know, just, Hollywood's weird, that's all I'm saying. So like, the whole thing with Fairbanks Jr. is, if she was chatting to somebody that she was, you know, interested in or was interested in her, is she would let him listen in on the phone call and then let him go like absolutely apeshit ranting about her suitors, which is, I mean, it's a level of like petty that I don't want to aspire to, but also I appreciate her tenacity. But yes, this is the point where she is box office poison, quote unquote, you know, and she has some fans, right? 1939, good bunch of fans, and one of which is, you know, the leader of the Third Reich. So not the kind of fans you want, you know. I get it. I wouldn't want anyone following me or being interested in me. I do not want Nazis, like, in any capacity to be supportive of me. Like, I don't want you, just like I don't want conservatives or Republicans. I want decent human beings who actually, you know, don't need explained to them that you should care about other people, that basic empathy is not virtue signaling, you know. Not keen on that in any capacity. Not my thing. No, thank you. Bye-bye. So yeah, she's not doing well in the box office, but you know, that's right. The Nazi government, you know, Nazi Germany, they contact her and they request that she stars in a range of propaganda films, you know, to show how amazing Germany is and the Third Reich and everything that goes along with that. But like 2 years previously, she'd already applied for American citizenship and she was like ready to renounce. And that's what she was doing. She was renouncing her German citizenship because she was like, I'm not fucking involved with this bullshit. I'm not my circus, not my monkeys. No, thank you. Adios, Adolf. Like, fuck off. No. Very much a fuck this for a game of socials. But when they contact her, when they ask her to be in these propaganda movies, She simply responds, nein. Just nein. Like, oh, we love you. You're amazing. We want you to be in this movie. We want you to promote her horrific fascist agenda. No. Like, I love it. It's like the same feeling I get about Princess Alice of Battenberg, where she's just like lighting a cigarette and just being like, no. Like, I love it. Like, no. Like, I love it. Just putting the ash out on the fucking soldiers' like shoes. Like, no. Like, that's also terrifying. You've got Goebbels and Hitler being like, come be in our movies. Get to fuck me. No. Oh, actually, no, correction already. No, it wasn't 1939, it was 1937. So it was like pre-war. So like she was watching what was happening in Germany and they're like, come and support our homeland. And she's like, no, no. She doesn't want to be involved in that. And like straight away, it's actually after this, straight away, she's like, nope, citizenship, thanks, bye-bye. And that's what she does. She like doesn't renounce her German citizenship until 1939, when, you know, the war technically starts. And she's like, definitely gone, thanks, bye. But yeah, bold move. And we love it. So Marlene Dietrich, she actually starts fundraising to get Jews out of Germany. So she starts like raising money for Jewish refugees, and she ends up donating, what was it, her entire salary from one of her films in 1937, you know, like $500,000, I think it is, like towards this like fundraising. And when World War II breaks out, like she like doubles down on it. So like she'd gone back to Paramount, tried a romantic comedy, things did not go down well. Yes, the movie was A Knight Without Armour. So then when, obviously, the war breaks out, World War II, she becomes one of the first, like, celebrities, you know, public figures to start selling war bonds. And the best part is like, she actually sells more war bonds than any other, like, person, any other celebrity, any other, she sells the fucking most, because of course she does. Like, she even then starts doing like the USO sort of thing, like the tours where she visits the troops. And so she even goes like pretty close to the German front, and she gets contacted by the OSS, so basically the British sort of secret service, right? And they ask her to make a series of recordings in German, the whole purpose of which is to, like, demoralize German soldiers. Which, I mean, I don't know how you can bring down the morale of Nazis, because, you know, they're Nazis, and pretty shit human beings and lack, again, empathy and consideration. But yeah, she's, so she ends up doing these recordings, which is fucking brilliant. Like, And so, like, you'd think, you know, she's doing the bonds, she's raising money for Jewish refugees, she's got these weird messages going on, she's visiting troops near the front, like, yeah. But J. Edgar Hoover is convinced, that's right, President of America is convinced. No, he wasn't the President of America, that's a lie. He was ahead of the FBI. Fuck me, I'm tired. I'm so sorry. So he's the head of the FBI, and he's like, that bitch is a German spy. And he ends up having her tracked and followed, which I feel was not the best use of, you know, those money and manpower. Just feels like a waste, really. So they end up, like, tracking her and like stalking her and like going through her mail and whatnot, and they don't find, you know, any like conspiracy and any spying. What they do find is salacious details and so many lovers, just an abundance of lovers, some might say. And so during World War II as well, which is like so fucking funny, is that people assumed that she was easy, you know, because she was known to have all these lovers, and they thought, you know, they think if you're bisexual, you're clearly a slut, right? That's just how they do things. And so men would come up to her and they'd be like trying to get it on, and she was like, I'll sleep with you over Hitler's dead body. Sorry. I will sleep with you over Hitler's dead body. Like, yeah, yeah, when he's dead, then I'll consider you, you absolute cockwomble. But yeah, she wasn't really into the whole fascist Germany situation, unlike her sister, who was, like, running a cinema, hosting things for Nazi troops, and just generally supporting them. And so when she tries to get to the States, she expects Marlena to, like, help her get there, and she's like, no, I'm disowning you and your husband and your son, because, you know, Nazis, not happening. I mean, well, she kept them safe at first, and she vouched for them, and she was like, they didn't do it, they were just in a bad situation. And then over time, she was like, no, actually, they're fucking assholes, I'm done with them. Which, you know, I respect. I respect being like, don't want to ally with people who allied with Nazis. Feels like a good litmus test, you know? Shitty family aside, Marlena gets awarded the Légion d'honneur from France and the US Medal of Freedom for extraordinary record entertaining troops overseas during the war. But like, she gets his award and that's going great, but still not great in the box office, so her professional life is not going well. But again, personally, not so bad. So at this point, Maria's in boarding school, so she actually gets to school, which is nice. So her daughter's in school, and she'll go visit her husband, and she'll go visit, well, her husband and his mistress, and Tamara. That's her name, Tamara. And so she would go there and go to parties, and she would just take these long trips and use it as excuses to go sort of connect with, you know, other celebrities and other well-known people like Ernest fucking Hemingway. And things are, you know, they're warming up for her. And she ends up having these long love affairs. She's got Freed. She's got Mercedes de Acosta. She's got Dolores del Rio, and so on and so forth. You know, I mean, she's getting around. She's getting around. Basically, there's, you know, a rotating door. Is it rotating? Revolving. It's a revolving door of lovers. And they're just going through. And one of her lovers, Jean Jarbon, he is so mad that she's, like, sleeping with other people. And she's like, you knew this when you got in this with me. Like, I'm married. And you are here staying with me in my house, and you're mad I'm sleeping with someone else? Like, what? Feels like a double standard. And he would respond to her actions with his fucking fists. He would beat the shit out of her. And clearly not one to take things lying down, she decided to just nope out of that situation. No, not dealing with that. Which, again, fair. But she did get, like, a wee bit of revenge, which I am proud of. It's like, so he'd gone back to France for reasons, and he'd left like a bunch of really expensive paintings behind, and that he was planning to come back and deal with, and she just fucking sells them all. Because of course she does. Which is, you know, the least she could do considering he beat the crap out of her, that absolute shitbag. Oh, actually, here's one of my favourite stories about Marlena Dietrich, is like, she'd gone out to like a bar, and she was flirting with a serviceman at a bar, as one does. Girls like a man in uniform. What can I say? Girls like a girl in uniform. We like women in uniform, not girls. I don't want a Girl Scout. That's creepy. I want a woman in a well-cut suit. Just saying. Or a man in a well-cut suit. Or a man. Or a woman. Or a gender non-conforming person. In a cozy cardigan. Everyone looks cute in a cozy cardigan. Anyway, like an owl. Ooh. Okay, the medicine's kicking in. So, yeah, Marlena is flirting with the serviceman in a bar, and he is so taken with her that his wife actually cites her as the reason for their divorce, even though they did no more than, like, flirt in a fucking bar. But anyway, her film career, it's not doing great, and so she ends up going back to the stage. So from, like, the 1950s all the way up to the 1970s, she's in, you know, she's on the stage, she's doing cabaret, like, performances. Like, she's in Paris, London, Las Vegas, Berlin. Like, she goes on the stage tour in Europe, like, in, like, the 60s, early 60s. And she ends up in Berlin, which is, well, it's still split. It's separated at this point. So she goes to West Berlin, and she gets booed. They're like, Marlena, go home. And they're, like, totally pissed at her. And they're, I think there's, like, two bomb threats for the stage that she's on. And it's, like, she's, like, shaken up by this, obviously. But then when she goes to East Berlin and she performs there, everyone's like, yay, Marlena! So, you know, swings and roundabouts. But yeah, she's out touring, she's performing, she's singing, she's doing her stuff. And even though she's doing all this, she's still doing a bunch of other people. So at one point she's in a relationship with Yul Brynner, you know, from The King and I, Yul Brynner, who's, yeah, the man who, like, was involved in that Vietnam baby situation, like, with the Playboy, and it's madness, it's wild. Anyway, so she's with Mike Todd and George Bernard Shaw and John Wayne and Kirk Douglas and Frank Sinatra. Like, she is just getting into everybody. And, like, her and Rudolph are still married at this point. And, like, she is supporting them, like, financially. She buys them a ranch in California. And it doesn't go well for Rudolph's mistress, though, because she's ill and she starts, like, declining, like, mentally, and she gets agoraphobia and she's, like, stops eating and speaking, and she ends up getting committed to a mental institute, you know, because they're like, she needs to go here. And she goes there and another inmate attacks her and kills her. And, like, she had been with, you know, Rudolph Sieber for, like, 35 years. Like, Maria saw her as, like, another mother. And, yeah, she passed away. She passed away. She was fucking killed. So, like, in the 60s and the 70s, so, like, throughout that period, like, she starts using various techniques to mold her body. So she does, like, Spanx before Spanx. She has, quote-unquote, body sculpting undergarments, you know, shapewear. And so she's, like, making the shapewear and, like, wearing it. And she's also doing non-surgical facelifts. It's tape. It's all tape. So she, like, tapes her face back and then puts a wig on. And she, like, disguises it. And she has this fucking brilliant quote. So she says, careful grooming may take 20 years off a woman's age, but you can't fool a flight of stairs. So yeah, you might be, like, conjuring and taping your face back and stapling bits and the wig on, but yeah, that those stairs, they're still going to be tough to climb, you know what I mean? So yeah, she does that, and then in 1965, she gets diagnosed with cervical cancer, and this is just not great for her. And so she ends up taking, like she's self-medicating with, like, booze and painkillers, and it gets to the point where like, this is just, like, really starts taking a toll on her. And then, like, things start going wrong with her legs, like, the circulation starts going and she's having a lot of trouble with it. And in 1973 she ends up fracturing like her left thigh, and she has to get like skin grafts and a bunch of other stuff so that her leg will heal, because it just wasn't. And then in 1974, she falls and breaks her leg, her right leg. So it's like left thigh, right leg. And she ends up like just not being able to like perform properly. But, like, at some point during this as well, she ends up in a movie with David Bowie. David Bowie. Bowie, Bowie. I don't care. She ends up in a movie. I mean, of all the queer icons to smoosh together in a film, I mean, it's not a great film, but you should still watch it. Because, I mean, I like to say they sing. She kind of sings. She does what she believes is singing. Again, respect the drip. Thank God the women had such good style. So she's breaking bits all over the place. I fucked it up again. She fractures like one leg, she fractures the other leg, and then in 75 she breaks her thigh bone. And she's like, okay, no more stage for me, I'm done now. And she has to basically like stop doing the whole stage performance because she's too old to do it now. In 76, her husband Rudolph dies. He passes away. In 78, that's when she's in the Just a Gigolo movie with David Bowie. And like, they're in the movie. Like, she's like the madam of the brothel and he works for her. It's a movie that exists. So after this, she basically becomes like a recluse, a hermit, and she just like goes back to her little apartment in Paris where she only has like family or servants, and she doesn't like go anywhere. But she does spend a lot of time on the phone. She has a monthly phone bill of like 3,000 quid because she's phoning everybody. So she's phoning world leaders like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and because this is the 80s, and she's just like calling all these people. Like, she's trying to save like a Babelsberg Theatre, and so like she's happy to speak, but she doesn't want to be filmed, which is fair enough. So she's like chatting to these people and she's trying to like save like this thing, or she's talking about the fall of the Berlin Wall, and you know, it's being like shared across like the BBC and on like French radio and all that jazz. And like, allegedly, according to her grandson, like the reason she would phone up these politicians was to give out shit to them for being dicks. I just love the idea of Marlene Dietrich just being on the phone to Margaret Thatcher being like, listen here, bitch. Have you tried, you know, not being a cunt? Like, perhaps? But yeah, I love the idea of it. So at one point she gets like these calls from a doctor who like offers to like fly out and see her, and she's like, don't speak to me, and she cuts him off. And then a few weeks later she allows him to phone her again, and he's like, I'm spending $90 an hour on this therapist. And she's like, why give money to the therapist when you can give money to me? And so like he sends her a check and she like sings to him on the phone every night. Like, that's commitment. So Marlena, she becomes bedridden and just can't go anywhere. And eventually her kidneys give up. And on the 6th of May, 1992, the age of 90, she passes away from kidney failure in her home in Paris. Her funeral was a requiem mass held in Paris, which had like 1,500 like mourners, with like important like dignitaries and whatnot from Germany, France, England, Spain. Like, the French president is there, and he's got like the Legion of Honor and everything for her. And yeah, she has her funeral in France, and she is buried in Berlin, fairly close to her mother, actually. And then, like, the majority of her estate is sold to the Stiftung Deutsche Kinematik. So, becomes, like, the main part of the exhibition of the Filmhaus in Berlin. And so the family then also sell, like, a bunch of, papers and correspondence and letters and, you know, costumes and props and all the stuff that she'd taken from, like, the stage and movies, and all of her personal effects get sold to, like, auction. So, you know, they're out there. You could buy them if you had enough money, if you wanted to. So, yeah, thus ends the story of Marlene Dietrich, who was, very polarizing figure in many scenarios. And if you liked my retelling of the story, even with my gravelly sick voice, please feel free to rate and review 5 stars. I'd appreciate it. But of course, it is recommendation time. So I'm going to recommend for watching Just a Gigolo. Go watch the movie. You should. Live your best life. Treat yourself. For reading, I'm going to suggest It's Not a Bloody Trend, which is a book about adult ADHD. If you're an adult with ADHD, which you may be because you're listening to me, you might want to go read it. And for listening, David Bowie. Go listen to some David Bowie. Starman racing through the sky. You deserve it. Go do it. And with that, I shall bid you good night. Adios. Au revoir. Auf Wiedersehen, my friends. Bye-bye.